Good morning, everybody, and welcome to episode 26 of the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces. I am your host, Coleman, and I just want to say I really enjoy seeing all those fists being thrown up during the ending of that song. Makes me smile, makes me laugh. So thank you all for tuning in and joining us. I want to say good morning to Gabe Lord, Shane, Jordan, Bob Van Kirk, Hunter. Good morning, gentlemen. How was your evening? Were you able to plant any Bitcoin seeds in your fields?
That's a great question, man. It almost sounds wrong, but yeah, I hope so. I mean, that's the point, right? That's the mission. Plant seeds wherever we go. The conversation always goes in that one direction, man. All roads lead to Bitcoin.
So I'm
you get through every night, whoever my partner is, when we're rolling around and getting in. Oh, sorry there, Jordan. I was just going to say, we're rolling around at jiu-jitsu every night. Whenever I get somebody in the submission, I just lean over and whisper in their ear, you'll get Bitcoin at the price you deserve.
That's awesome. I'm not planting the seed yet. Right now, I'm tilling the soil, making sure it's nice and nourished so that when I start planting these seeds, they take off right away.
I like that. I like that analogy. I think I'm going to stick with this for a while. Tilling your soil, making sure it's fertile, and then planting the seeds, make sure we're watering it. In case you're not familiar with the reference, this goes on from yesterday's conversation that we had. Highly suggest you guys go back and listen to it on Spotify or find the link on our X page. But while everyone's still joining us, waking up, getting the gunk out of your eyes, refilling your coffee, your tea, I just want to make sure everyone understands the purpose of why we do this every morning. And it is, just like we said, to plant those seeds, to make sure that we're building strong ties within our communities. Again, we're not trying to tackle this beast all by ourselves. We're trying to get one person at a time so this snowball coming down the mountain can start turning into a large avalanche. And so we do this by showing people the power that Bitcoin has and its potential to allow us to hold our own assets, to allow us to be decentralized and be free from any government that wants to try and suppress us. We want to make sure that we get back to what our founders had envisioned for this country. Make sure that we have the right to free speech, the right to assembly, the right to due process, and right to religion. So Bitcoin is a major aspect of what we want to do and how we're going to be able to accomplish our goals. And so make sure that you follow us. If you're a veteran, please reach out to us. Send us a DM. We'll get you in touch with one of our community members. We are constantly growing, and we're getting larger every day. So reach out to us. We'll put you in touch with the right people, answer any questions you have. And again, we're here for everybody. There's no such thing as a stupid question. No, there's no such thing as a stupid question. There's stupid answers. I see Lisa just joined us. Good morning, Lisa. And Jason, good morning, sir.
Good morning, my favorite Bitcoin Twitter people. How's everybody today?
I'll speak for myself. I'm doing amazing. I woke up all fired up. I'm ready to tackle the world. I had a good conversation with neighbors and family yesterday, so I'm ready for the challenges that lie ahead.
Oh, I love that. Well, good. I had a great night's sleep. I have not been sleeping well, and I took 2 magnesium last night. Oh my gosh, total game changer. Highly recommend magnesium. I think I must have needed it. Feeling great. Let's go.
Let's go is right. And so I'm just going to go ahead and I'm going to unleash Shane, Jordan, and Gabe Lord. And we had a little discussion going back in the back channels. And I want to hear your thoughts of what's going on right now with specifically Josh Shapiro signing these warheads like it's some kind of joke. And that's all I'm going to say. And one of you gentlemen, just go ahead and take over and let's hear it. Don't hold back, please.
I think that video, I don't even think he realizes it, but that video is him signing his soul away to the devil. Like, it is so just stupid and incomprehensible. Like, it's just so evil that this guy's just signing bombs that are can you imagine a video of Hamas signing a missile before they launched it at Israel? Like, what action would be? That video just pissed me off so much because this motherfucker wants to sit behind a desk and act like he's big and tough. And I bet if he got popped in the mouth, he would shut up real quick and do whatever you told him to do, because he's a fucking pussy. Sorry for all the language, but I'm ticked.
I'd say that's pretty well stated, man. And none of that is untrue. It's the nerve that someone like him would have to put their name on something like that, and you know, and to video it and make a production about it. It's not a game, okay? But it is to them, okay? If it was his children that were out there on the front lines, he might be taking things a little bit differently, okay? While he's signing his name, he should go ahead and put his address on each of those two, and maybe one of them will be a dud, and somebody out there might be able to find it and come back and bring their grievances to him, because it is personal to the people that those bombs are going to be falling on top of, and it is personal to the families of the soldiers who are going to be going out there and cleaning up their mess. So until he's ready to put his own kids on the front line, which, by the way, a little side note, I think that legislators who are going to vote for action like this, they should be required to send at least one of their children out there to be on the front lines, because it doesn't matter to them. It's not personal to them. It's another world to them, and it means nothing to them. It's a show. It's an act. It's all theater.
It is all show and theater, and it's really disgusting that we've got to this point where we can look at this and we can see this happening, and there's not a huge outcry from the media and everything. It's so weird, and I'm not sure if it was in a movie or if this is an actual thing, but I believe that at a time there was a law in place where if you voted to go to war, you had to volunteer yourself. And if someone can refresh that, I'm trying to do a Google search on it right now. But I believe at one point there was something like that was present. Shane, I haven't heard from you yet, sir. I know this is. I'd like to get your thoughts on this.
I'm really just trying to contain myself, because this is a show that I want people to come back to. And inside, I can't tell you the temperature inside of me right now and the disgust level. This is where I think, you know, emotion gets a hold of me. And I got to be careful with it, because when you're emotional about things, instead of clear headed, you will make mistakes. First and foremost, I'm going to tell you guys, I'm not a fan of Putin. I am obviously not a fan of Israel. I am not on either side. I think this idea that we're picking sides for people who are at war is just the most bot indoctrinated thing you could possibly do. With that being said, the politicians that are out there grandstanding, and I mean grandstanding right now, for not the American people, they're literally signing the lives away of an entire generation again. And it's like we do not learn our lessons. We have gone through the last 20 plus years, and we've been in, you know, nonstop constant contact, and that is a fault of these politicians with no spine, who are sold out, who have handlers, who are part of the MIC, that are part of this, you know, this cabal, that are blackmailed and everything else. Like the idea, and I think Jordan covered it, and I think that's probably what took a lot of the wind out of my sails. I'm glad somebody said it the way they did. You know, this is the most reprehensible. And the thing is I think America sees it. I really do. I think America has gotten to the point whether, you know, most of you, I'm not saying all of them, but I think the vast majority are waking up to this idea that war is not a good thing. And, you know, there's an old saying that in war, there is no winners and losers. There's just who's left. And these guys have wiped out an entire generation, specifically for Ukraine, right? Specifically for Ukraine. Ukraine has been outgunned, out-armored, outmatched, outmaneuvered, out everything in this war. They have paid extremely heavy consequences. And the thing is they could have never won it. When you look at what Russia has in terms of power and projection, they could have wiped the entire state of Israel off of the map if they wanted to. They could have gone in there. NATO has no claim to Ukraine whatsoever. They could have gone in there and wiped them all off the map. So, you know, Putin has been somewhat reserved, and I would say very much reserved. So the fact that we continue to spend hundreds of billions of dollars and then sacrifice the entire generation, we're talking about people's kids, people's aunts and uncles and fathers and mothers. This is so personal to me because we have been lied into every conflict. And if they can't get us to go into a hot conflict, they pull off this proxy war bullshit like Ukraine. And unfortunately, you know, it's now spilling over into the Middle East where they are committing another generation of Marines and airmen and soldiers. And it's just, it's like, at what point do the veterans, the bikers, the pipe hitters, like all of these guys in America go, enough is enough, man. Like, we see you. We know what you're doing. We know who you're bought by. This has got to stop or else. And I have always said, and we will always say, you know, we want peaceful resolutions on this show. We want peaceful resolutions no matter what. We want peaceful resolutions. Like, that is it. But there comes a point, and we're getting to that point, and they're trying to force our hand in this. It is the blatant show of disrespect for not only the American people, but the Ukrainian people and everybody else who are suffering under these regimes is going to be catastrophic. And that has to be dealt with at some point.
And Shane, that, I want to touch on two things really quick of what you said. First, I don't ever want you to hold back. I want you to be honest and be yourself. And that's how we're going to grow this network, by being true to what we believe in. So don't ever think you have to hold back or watch what you're going to say about something, because that's the people that are listening to this think very like-minded like us. And that's how we want to grow these people. We don't want to deceive anybody on the way that we feel. The second thing I definitely want to hit on is, I was talking about the last point you made. We've been standing by long enough, and now it's time for call of action. And I was speaking with my neighbors yesterday afternoon about this. And I feel there's a huge shift from the last 4 years in the presidential election, where they could say things, they can manipulate. And we kind of just said, you know what, let's the system work. Let's do this democratically. But I think we've broken that point where we can't sit back anymore, and we're not going to tolerate the lies, the decisiveness, or the being deceived. And I think that's what we're starting to see come to fruition right now.
I think that we are to a certain degree. When you look at what one of the results of the whole COVID experience and all the unrest and all the garbage that we went through 4 years ago, which seems like these things kind of happen on a cycle. If you pay attention, there seems to be a pattern. But and I say that kind of tongue in cheek, but one of the results of that is people do question things a little bit more now. And that did push enough people, after all the vaccine bullshit, all the lockdowns, everything that came along with that. More people now are saying, wait a minute, this feels kind of familiar. This all feels like all that same bullshit that happened a few years ago. Something's not right. Okay. And people are starting to notice those glitches in the matrix and starting to ask more questions. Now, I spend time kind of lurking and lingering around within different social media channels that are like heavily still deep within the system, like Facebook, like LinkedIn. I'm in there. Part of my mission is to go in there and grab people and pull them out. But I'm telling you, a lot of the conversation, it's like you said, Coleman, it is shifting, but there still is a significant enough part of that population that is just going along with this. That does, you know, they see it as like they're picking their favorite contestant on freaking Price is Right, and they're just cheering for whatever side that they think they should be cheering for. We have so many people that are more than happy just to put a freaking blue and yellow flag out in front of their house because it's popular that week. Okay, soon we're going to see Taiwanese flags flying out in front of people's houses, and they don't even know where the hell it is. Okay, you give people their freaking the victim that they're supposed to support, and they're going to jump up and they're going to support it because that's what everybody else is doing. That's why it's important. And it's just like we were talking about in the very beginning, when Jordan, when you were mentioning about cultivating the ground, making the soil fertile, that's one of those things we've got to do, is continue having those conversations with people and let them come to those discoveries on their own. Because many of these types of truths that are being revealed, many of these things that are just people are getting sick of, if you force it on people, then they don't really accept it well. And so that's why it's important to have these conversations in a way, especially with our fellow veterans, in a way that is going to open doorways for them and let them come to these discoveries themselves to, as I've heard said, collect the dots and connect the dots. Thank you, Lisa, to give people opportunities to do that and to come to those realizations on their own. Because forcing it down people's throats and saying, listen, you idiot, don't you understand you're being freaking manipulated and lied to? Because nobody wants to feel like they've been a victim of something like that. But helping people to realize it, opening up the doors, putting the dots down in front of them and letting them figure it out on their own, I think that's going to be much more effective as we're going forward. The good news is, I'm going to say it, our adversaries are laying out all kinds of evidence in front of everybody. I mean, they're the best Bitcoin and freedom tech marketing team that has ever been, because they don't care. That's the thing, is they do this with such indignance. They do not care what people think anymore, because they don't believe that we're going to stand up. And why do they think that? Because we never have before. So they have every reason to believe that they can just continue the way that they are continuing. And I'll echo it again. We seek peace, and that is what we are going to have. Okay, but action will be taken, because there is no other recourse. There is no other path. Okay, for things like this to change, okay, I mean, it's physics. If something is on a trajectory, it's not going to change that path unless something else acts upon it. And that time is happening, and it's happening right now.
I like that, Gabe. I like your rants. A lot of good points made there. Really, really quick, I want to welcome Eomar up here on the stage. Good morning. And I'm sorry if I got your name wrong.
No, you're good. Good morning. Thanks for having me up here. Sorry, my kid started school and got me sick, so voice is a little in and out. But yeah, I just want to say, like, I dropped a couple of articles in the space there, and you guys are spot on. And like, one thing I think that's important to realize is, like, this isn't a new phenomenon, right? Like, I think Shane, you're a Marine. I think there's a couple others in here probably too. You guys know of Smedley Butler and Wars Iraq. He warned us after World War One of what was going on, right? And then we had Eisenhower after that try to warn us. So, like, I think part of the problem is a lot of people think, oh, this is kind of new and it'll just kind of fade away, but it's not new, right? Like, they've had this grip on us for over 100 years now. And I think that the military-industrial complex's grip on our government is part of the reason why we supported, Zionism. You know, the early, I think it was the King Crane Commission, said it would be, if we supported it, it would require constant military intervention. So to most people, that's horrific. But if you're a military contractor, it's a golden goose, right? Like, that's exactly what you want to hear. And I think that's part of the reason that it got pushed through. And, you know, not for nothing, it was America's worst president, Woodrow Wilson, that ignored the King Crane Commission. Just one more thing to put in his, morbid hat of failure. Another aspect, I think Americans don't understand, like, you know, we've been convinced, and I remember, like, as a kid seeing, like, Shock and Awe, right? They try to convince us, like, that's winning, right? Like, we blow these things up, we're winning something. But, like, even, I guess at some point, like, that might have had some validity, right? Like, if it's state against state or something and you destroy infrastructure, that state can't operate anymore. But even our own, like, doctrine now says, you know, if you look at, like, COIN doctrine, and basically every lesson since Vietnam says you can't win these conflicts just by destroying things. When Ron Paul tried to explain blowback during the presidential debate and got booed. It's a real thing, you know, like, so all we're doing here is we're sacrificing American lives, liberty, and property on behalf of foreign nations. And it's just kicking the can down the road, right? Like, it's guaranteeing, again, for that military-industrial complex that we have a war to fight down the road. We sent over more troops now because Israel's bombing Lebanon, and we're sending troops over there now. Nobody voted for it. There's no discussion in Congress. Not that I think it would change anything. But they didn't even talk about it, right? They just sent it over. And it's because we have, you know, an empty shell kind of administration right now that will just do whatever the deep state running it is telling it to do. The other thing you talked about, like, just how evil it is. I mean, it really is just pure evil. Like, these, and I don't think it's a new theme, right? Like, these people are weak, right? Like, if you look at Josh Shapiro, right? He doesn't project like a strong man, right? It's a weak man with that's morally bankrupt, right? So they're not showing you that they're strong. That's what they think they're showing you. What they're really showing is just how much evil they'll commit for like a paltry amount of money and power. And it's not just him. I mean, there's plenty of them. They're prolific throughout our government. And it kicks, and then to loop it back to like the military industrial complex, if you look at these politicians, a lot of them have like useless degrees. They mostly have bachelors, but a lot of it's in like political science and stuff. Sorry for all those political science majors. I was a minor in it myself, but you know, they're not overly employable outside of government. So when you're looking at that and you have like a couple $100,000 salary or whatever it is, and the prospect of you getting voted out if you don't play ball is that you go back to being a bartender, right? You know, they're going to play ball with the military industrial complex. It's that or bust, right? Like, they don't want that. They want to get some cush book deal and then go work as a contractor, like, you know, peddling more wars or more this or more that. And all of this is at the expense of the American people. In so many ways, like, you know, you think of it just as like lives overseas and maybe some tax dollars. But I mean, if you think of it like the Patriot Act after 9/11, right? Like, that's our freedom, right? The spying, the NSA spying, that's our freedom that's being violated. And again, it's all on behalf of these wars and these foreign nations that our government officials serve. None of it is good for us. I don't want to go on forever, but like I do write about this stuff, and I posted a few of the articles in there. If you guys want to read more in details, or if you want me to just keep on, I could rant about this probably till my voice fully gives out. So,
no, I really appreciate that, Eomar. If you don't mind, can you throw some of the information you're talking about up in the nest, just so we have access to it? I don't see anything up there yet.
Yeah. I put it in like the pill, but I'll share it to the nest too.
All right, thank you. And so it's important, like we can address all the issues that are going, what's wrong with the country, with the politicians. But I think something that we fail to address is how do we fix it? What's the sly roundabout way that we can go around this? And again, Bitcoin fixes this. It does, but it can't be done all at once. It has to be done on a smaller scale, just like Satoshi did when he was running the first blocks on his computer, one person at a time, and then another and another. So again, go out there and plant those seeds, till your field, make sure that it's ready for. The next season.
Well, and I think too, when we say like Bitcoin fixes this, it's not always like, it's more than just Bitcoin, right? Like Bitcoin changes your perception of the world and changes your own personal incentive. So you go out and you do better things in your community. You do better things for yourself, for your family, and you make the world better just through your example, through just living the future that you want to see. And so, yeah, in that aspect, like Bitcoin fixes it, but it's way more than just Bitcoin. Like, to me, Bitcoin is the fuel that frees up my time and makes me want to be more efficient and a better person. And that kind of stuff is contagious out in society. So just go out there and be that beacon of light and use the Bitcoin as like maybe your fuel, but you don't even have to go out and talk about Bitcoin to fix things. Like, Bitcoin's fixing itself in this sly roundabout way that you don't even need to talk about it all the time. Now, the more people we orange pill, the more people we get to save in Bitcoin, you know, the better for them. But it's not always all about the Bitcoin. And I know, you know, we're Bitcoin veterans. It's in the name, but it's more than just that.
It is. And think about, like, if you don't want to just mention Bitcoin specifically, like, think about how you've been connected to different groups or communities or different ideas. I'll bring up the book Fiat Food. Like, just that journalist read, I think it was the Bitcoin Standard and then Fiat Money and by Saifedean. And then he was compelled to write the book Fiat Foods because of what he discovered in there. He thought Saifedean was lying. It turned out that he was underreporting what had happened. And so just that whole, you know, Bitcoin fixes it. Bitcoin is fixing the way people look at food, the way that we eat, our health. And so again, I really like what you said there, Jordan.
I can't help but be reminded of the Declaration of Independence with this. And I think Bitcoin is a declaration of independence, of monetary independence. And if you guys haven't read that, I think Mike Hobart was one of the co-authors on that as well. And it's absolutely fantastic. But You know, the part that really strikes me is, you know, if you haven't read the Declaration of Independence, the Declaration of Independence is really a breakup letter, right? Is they go through and they list out every grievance that, you know, that they could at the time. And at the end of it, they start to talk about, you know, what they've done in terms of trying to redress their government. It says, in every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by an act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. And I got to tell you, you know, like we as Bitcoiners especially, but a lot of other, you know, people who have worked tirelessly to change this tyrannical government have, you know, done so extremely peacefully. You know, like the whole idea of January 6th, where, you know, you're going to have, you know, some sort of insurrection in a country that has 500 million firearms that they didn't bring to the Capitol, you know, is obviously laughable to begin with. But this idea that we have latched onto with Bitcoin, I think we're on the cusp of something absolutely fundamentally game changer right here. And then I think that's part of the reason why things are changing as fast as they are, is because people are looking at the exit. People are going, all right, how are we going to time this correctly? And when they go, they're going to go. And I think the people that have been talking about the Omega candles, I'm not, you know, Bitcoin is not about price for me. It's one of those things. It's the revolution. And if we get this right, the short circuiting of this violent revolution that I think they are pressing us for is going to be met with the common people short circuiting it through technology, whether it's the ability to communicate on this platform, whether it's the ability to trade with each other without them, and continuing to let them run their money printer to where nobody wants to accept these dirty ass cuck bucks. I think we're onto it. I think, you know, patience is one of those things, and we have to kind of zoom out a little bit, right? Is like we are living in the minutiae of it every day, and it's absolutely infuriating. But at the same time, you know, if you zoom out, you know, in 4 years, look how far we've come. And I think, Gabe, you mentioned it, is the media has lost all trust. The government has lost all trust. Trust is being absolutely destroyed in all of these fiat organizations and states around the world right now at an amazing rate. And I think, you know, that's where we've got to just kind of sit there and take a little homage and say, yeah, you know what, keep up the whole Bitcoin network, keep planting those seeds, keep bringing people in, keep fostering the idea that we're having conversations, because if we're communicating, we're having conversations, we're not shooting at each other. And that, I think that is the most beautiful thing about Bitcoin.
Yeah. And I think, like, to add on to that, like, lost trust thing, right? Like, as it stands right now, like, the government is having a real hard time filling all the requirements it has in terms of like munitions and supplies and everything like that. Like it was falling short before the conflict, before like Israel started, you know, massacring civilians in Gaza. And you know, that's the amount of bombs they've dropped there. I forget the total tonnage now, but it's a lot, right? So it's adding on to an already taxed system. So like we don't have, like our government doesn't have the capability to supply the munitions for these wars. And in terms of like recruiting and stuff, I don't know if you guys follow it at all, but recruiting has been down significantly too. And it's just going to keep getting worse, right? Like there was, you know, we always have like the myth and like the idealized, like heroism of war and stuff, right? Like, it's not new, right? Like if you guys are familiar with, William Calley, the guy that, was primarily responsible for the My Lai massacre. He idolized Audie Murphy, who was a decorated World War II veteran turned actor. And, you know, I'm sure all of us, you know, we had our, it's probably like Saving Private Ryan and stuff like that. You know, you see like some of these things and you think of like the heroism, but like, I think what the world is seeing now, they didn't see then, right? Like when we saw Shock and Awe, it was mostly like a loop of like some bombs going off against a backdrop of buildings and stuff, but now we see like the carnage that's inside those buildings, right? And like the you know, men, women, and children that are suffering because of it. And I don't think that's going to do anything good for the recruiting process. I don't think it's going to, you know, if the state gets like it's world war that's trying to push us towards, they will need like a draft. And I just don't see I don't see people like quietly just sending their kids and like, you know, waving a flag. I think a lot of that is lost, you know, like the main thing our government tries to do, and it does it in every war. I recognized it when I was, you know, deployed and I'd come back and people, I had somebody literally say, oh, we're still there. I didn't know. But like they would try to keep the American people like ignorant of the fact that we're at war, right? Like we don't want like a war footing here in the United States. They don't want like anything rationed. They don't want the slightest bit of inconvenience for the vast majority of people in the United States, because that'll cause, you know, pushback and fallout. And it's like such a house of cards that I think any like breeze against like the war machine will cause it to topple. So I don't see them having the ability, like both from like manufacturing capacity and just from the people standpoint, to really like drive us towards this, like these wide, like to actually conduct these wider wars. And I think part of the reason we're still on that footing is because the people leading this country are so out of touch. You know, like if you're 78 years old in Congress, you probably haven't formed a new thought since 1990. And you think that we just defeated the Soviet Union and we're like the pinnacle of power. But the dynamics have changed, you know, like there's not just me, but like, you know, like actual professionals that are waving the flag about how like the carrier platform is vulnerable. It doesn't like achieve the missions that we need to do. And then like going back to like how destroying stuff doesn't really win anything, you know, 80%+ of Gaza is destroyed and Hamas is still able to operate. So like we can bomb things, but it's not really going to change anything on the ground. And as like the missile and drone technology proliferates and advances, our ability to project our force across these different nations with impunity, I think, is going to continue to decline. So I think it's going to necessitate a change one way or another. And then like bringing it back to Bitcoin, like the part of the like the arrangement with the US dollar as like the reserve currency is that it comes with like these perks of all the different weapons platforms and weapon systems, and they're very complicated. And it's like a, you know, basically like a month to month contract to keep these things running and going and everything. But if, you know, you can almost get there with some easily to launch, like off a bag of rice rockets and whatnot, it kind of diminishes the value of that arrangement. And again, we also way overplayed our hand with Russia when we did like the SWIFT action and kicked them off of that. I think it was, you know, we thought we had this magic weapon that would destroy them. And all it did was show the world that our sanctions aren't as strong as they used to be. And it's probably because we've overused it. You know, I lived in Russia for a bit, so I talked to a friend of mine. And she said, you know, the last time we were sanctioned, it really hurt. But this time, you know, we're more ready for it, so it's not going to be so bad. And she was right. You know, like they did pretty well this time after it. I think all of that stuff just shows like a tide is turning. And, you know, people keep talking about BRICS and stuff, right? But the BRICS currencies, the BRICS currencies lose value faster than the dollar, right? So if they all got together and they wanted something to use, but they didn't want any particular country to be in charge of it, I mean, there's something that sticks out above all the other things as like a good option. And to me, it's Bitcoin, you know. It's the one thing that can remove the power from any particular state, but also remove the power from the United States. And, you know, Russia doesn't have to be in control of the next currency to be in a winning position, right? They just have to take that next reserve currency out of the United States' hands. So that's a win for all of our adversaries and a loss for us. A loss for our government, I should say, not a loss for us.
That's a really good point, though, because in all of these other countries, if they adopt a Bitcoin standard, they hurt the US and they all gain at least somewhat, at least by like leveling the playing field. So even though they're not in control of it, it would help level everything and take down one of their bigger adversaries. So that's a really good point.
Yeah, no, a lot of what we think of like the third world, you know, they have a lot of like energy and stuff, energy capabilities as well. So it goes, you know, kind of works to their advantage, you know. So
you can look at Bhutan. They have the fourth largest Bitcoin holding out of any country, and they're doing it 100% by renewable energy. And so you're going to see these countries that have nothing to lose and everything to gain to really to change. So it's, I always find that part of the Bitcoin ecosystem or journey very fascinating, is how these little countries are able just to thrive and give prosperity back to their citizens through this technology. And that's what gets me excited. Lisa, you're very quiet this morning. Do you have anything you'd like to talk about?
No, I mean, how have I not known the gentleman that was just speaking, Ilmar? What an amazing take you just had. Thank you for all of that. No, I mean, you know, one of my topics that I focus a lot on is the petrodollar and looking at what other countries, how other countries might perceive Bitcoin, why they're mining Bitcoin. I mean, really, it should be no surprise to us that, and it wasn't, you know, that Russia mined one out of every five Bitcoin in 2023. They are the world's second largest producer of natural gas. It's us, Russia, and then, you know, I think the four following Russia are very small in comparison. But of course, they're mining Bitcoin with their natural gas. If you can't sell goods into a dollarized world, and this applies for everyone, right? Like, if I'm in a small place in Africa, if I'm in Russia, if I'm in you name it, and I can't sell whatever I make into a dollarized world, am I even a recognized citizen of the world? And I would say no. And with Bitcoin, you finally have a place for every person on Earth to have a voice and to use the same language. No middleman, no foreign exchange desk, no investment banker necessary. And so, you know, I think that your point on that, what you said about BRICS, you know, all of those depreciate faster than the dollar, I mean, is an incredible thing to call out. Because yes, obviously we know that, but I don't think we say that out loud. And I don't think that really gets said enough. So thank you for raising that point. Because, you know, I really believe that the BRICS is merely a stepping stone in the middle of the river, right? They've gone from one side of the river to the middle of the river on their way to the Bitcoin shore. And, you know, once they get there and once it becomes just a regular way of doing business for China and India and Russia and, you know, everybody else to settle for, to settle their natural resource trades in Bitcoin, like it's over, which is, again, like just to raise the stablecoin issue, which is always perplexing to me that there has been so much, you know, the smart people in Washington have come down so hard on stablecoins, or their opinions on stablecoins are not positive. Because when we look at what could possibly be a buyer of U.S. dollar denominated assets, like pretty much you got the stablecoin holders, right? If you're not, if other countries, if other sovereigns, if huge institutional buyers don't feel safe holding your debt, like or your treasuries or your other assets, like really stablecoins, you might want to take a second look. You know, it's anyway. So really enjoyed everything that you had to say. Thank you.
So I'd like to just go ahead and start moving on to another thing I'd like to hit on, and that's China had their cut their rates 50 basis points yesterday evening. So their Chinese 10-year bond fell below 2%, and this is the first time ever on record. Some other big news was that they cut the bank's reserve requirement ratios. They cut interest rates on all outstanding mortgages. And they're allowing funds brokers to tap the Bank of China funding to buy stocks. And there's going to be 500 billion won of liquidity support that they're able to inject into their stock market. So that works out to be about 71 billion USD that China is going to use to help out their stock market because they're in a little bit of a recession. Anybody have any thoughts on that?
I don't know, maybe somebody smarter on this could answer, but 7 billion US dollars doesn't, in today's world, doesn't
71. Seem like, 71.
Okay. Well, even that doesn't seem like a whole lot to bail out, you know, an economy. But maybe I just don't have a good grasp on China's economic size. You know, when we're talking about the U.S. economy needing trillions now to be bailed out, and in 08 it was like 800 billion. I don't know. Maybe somebody smarter can make that make sense to me.
So the way I took it was that wasn't for the economy. That was only for the stock market, and they have more reserves that they're going to inject into the economy. And again, I could be completely wrong on that take, but that's how I read the report that was released. So they're just, I think the biggest thing that relates to Bitcoin and to us is that they're starting to inject more money. Money's becoming more liquid across the globe. And so it's a spiral effect or a snowball effect where one country starts, another one starts. And this is really lining up to this next bull run where we're supposed to start hitting. And if everyone starts turning on the money printer at the same time, all the models are broken. So that gets me pumped to see the price hopefully jumping up.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense too. If you know, like the engine of the world is in a recession, like that means everybody else is following soon behind. Although I'd push back on your, it doesn't necessarily get me excited that the money printer's going to get turned on and that number go up, because it's really just numbers stay the same relative to the dollars that are out there.
I think another like aspect of this equation is like, you know, if the BRICS countries or, you know, other countries in general come to the same conclusion that like, you know, while the timeline might be unknown, the US dollar reserve currency thing is declining. And if they see Bitcoin as that alternative, it's in their interest, right? Like the last like bull run, you know, people are saying like, oh, like you take out loans and then buy Bitcoin. That's effectively what governments do, right? Like that's what the United States government's doing. We're, I think, still the largest like government holder of Bitcoin, and we're printing money like crazy. And you know, if you had the ability to get free money with fake money, and you wanted to prepare for its impending collapse, you would probably want to stack Bitcoin and gold. And the United States is the largest holder, at least on paper. You know, people always complain when I point to like Fort Knox and our gold reserves, but at least on paper, we're the largest holder of gold. And we are, I think, still the largest holder of Bitcoin in the world. So if, you know, effectively, like I look at it as the United States is short the dollar because we're stacking all this other stuff. I think it would, you know, if you're China and you're looking around, and even if somebody, they might not be 100% sold, but if they think it's possible, they would probably want to, you know, print some fake money to, you know, start stacking other assets. And I know they've been buying gold recently. I read that a couple of places. I wouldn't be surprised if they are, you know, working on their Bitcoin reserves as well. And, you know, the governments have all like the legal avenues, especially I think in China more so even than here, where they can just, you know, wave a hand and then your Bitcoin is their Bitcoin, you know, assuming they can get all the keys and everything like that. You know, I think that's something else that to keep an eye on, like how states are using this printed money, not just like in the stock market, but like what else are they buying up? Are they buying up like hard assets and stuff? And I've pointed to it before, but if you read the book, When Money Dies, it paints a pretty good picture of like what we might see, right? Like, so the first place that people fled money to was like foreign currencies, and then it was like the stock market, because, you know, it was the stocks will inflate with the currency, and then, you know, farmers, you know, they did pretty well, and, you know, it's basically like people with assets, like hard assets or things that would be in demand regardless. So I think that is worth giving a read if you guys haven't read it before, to get an idea of where this might go. And I think, you know, again, I'm just a dude on the internet right now. I'm sure governments, I'm sure somebody that works close to governments can figure this out. So something to keep an eye on, I think.
And remember, they don't, go ahead, Jordan.
Just to clarify, because I realized that maybe I came off sounding bearish when I say like I don't really care about the number go up in
relation to like money printing. Just like in a vacuum, just number go up, I don't care about. The number that I would care about that would, I think, be more of a signal is an increase in the adoption rate, because that tied with NGU actually means something, if that makes sense. Like if governments start adopting it, more citizens and individuals start adopting it, that's when you the number go up actually means something.
I think the citizens and people are waiting for a new all-time high. And I think that high is closer to 80 or 90,000. A lot of people think it's the 100,000 mark. But I think that's when you start seeing more people be like, okay, this thing is not going away. It's for real. So I think that's the lag. And I think that these countries printing money and putting it into their economies, I think it's going to help us get to that number quicker. But then once we hit that threshold, I think that's where you get into price discovery. And to comment on something Eomar said, I don't think that they necessarily have to print money to buy Bitcoin. If I was a country and I thought there was a possibility on it, I would just tap into my resources and mine. And I think if I read this correctly, that China's almost at 50% of the mining hash rate again. They're really, really high. I think they're higher than the United States. Someone correct me if I'm wrong on that. But I just saw that get released over the weekend. So that's something that, again, to look into, that they don't have to print. They just have to mine, and they have a lot of resources in which they can do that.
I think looking at the other side of this narrative too, as people who are not Bitcoiners yet, when we start dropping interest rates and money printers starts turning on, we got to be very careful with how we're approaching this. It reminds me of the scene. I think it's The Big Short where Brad Pitt's like, just don't fucking dance, right? There are a lot of people that are going to get absolutely wiped out. And we need to be real conscious of what that means, right? Like, this is not just, you know, some ephemeral people that are going to get wiped out. This is your neighbors, your family, your friends, and all that fun stuff. And so being those people that, you know, aren't like, oh, yeah, fuck everything and let's go buy Lambos or, you know, whatever. And I think it's, you know, fairly dicey to do something like that in the situation we're headed into anyway. But controlling this narrative as Bitcoiners and understanding that there's going to be a lot of hard times for a lot of people out there, and, you know, to kind of budget, especially for your own, you know, immediate family and maybe, you know, the community around you. That's going to be one of those things, I think, that where Bitcoiners are going to shine. But definitely, you know, be aware, you know, as this number goes up and they continue to print, it's going to wipe people out fast.
It is. And then there's no life raft for them to jump on. Sorry, Lisa, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, not at all. Yeah, Shane, you're right. The beatings will continue until you buy Bitcoin. And that's why I think, you know, I think that's one of the things that motivates me, is that, you know, I feel like I know my family isn't going to understand Bitcoin or understand how important it is. To the magnitude that is important, right? They know it's important to me. They don't probably understand. But I just feel like, all right, I'm, you know, going to kind of be the person in my family that understands and the person that takes on that responsibility. Hopefully there's one Bitcoiner in every family that can take that position. But really what I wanted to say is, like, shout out to everybody that buys the all-time high. I have been buying the all-time high since I first got into Bitcoin. In fact, the first time I bought it, I called a financial advisor who's a friend of mine, a guy who really fancies himself as a tech investor. He was really early to Facebook, et cetera. And I think Bitcoin was like 17,000-ish. And when I called and asked him, you know, have you bought any Bitcoin? He started laughing and said, you know, I make it a point not to lose money for my clients. Those were his exact words. And then his second statement was, why would you buy it here? Isn't it the all-time high? And I not only bought that, I mean, I've bought it. I think I probably bought some at like 68 or 69,000. I'm not quite sure I bought some at 70. I'm sure this next cycle I will. I feel like I've bought the high every time. So no better time to buy it than the high. It is when people rush into the space, having worked at, you know, two Bitcoin financial service companies, one being Unchained, you know, we see a rush of people come in to buy Bitcoin when it's in a bull run. So, you know, great time to indoctrinate people and applaud their fortitude for joining this movement that takes, you know, brass balls or whatever the expression is. It's hard to hang on when it goes to 16 when you've bought it at 69, but it makes you feel great.
Makes you feel great once it goes back up. It's not great on that ride down. that was my first Bitcoin purchase, was in the high 60s in 21. And someone told me it started dropping. Someone said it's going to go up to 100. So I put more in, and I definitely invested way too much for being a beginner. And out of necessity, of just fear of telling my wife we lost all of our savings, I had to read in and research and just build my conviction. And I can honestly tell you, I wrote it all the way to the bottom, and I kept buying as my conviction and knowledge increased. But that is not a fun feeling, going FOMO in when you don't know about it, and then just having your insides torn out when you see the price go like that. So make sure you always educate and always tell people, start off small. It's always easier to allocate more. It's really tough to take out.
Yeah, probably chat with your wife before you make a big purchase.
Oh, I told her I was going to do it. We both had the assumption it was going to go up, not down.
Yeah, and like I was in a very similar boat. I bought pretty high and wrote it back down, and just kept DCAing when it got low. But it's probably easier, like if you're like waiting for like, oh, I'm gonna buy, like if it goes over a certain number, then it's real and I'll buy it. It's probably less painful if you just start like DCAing now, and then like if you have like some threshold that for some reason when it got higher you wanted to buy it, it'd probably be a lot less painful if you did it that way. This way, like all of your money is in that one price point. So it gives you a little room to work with. Like, okay, like maybe you won't make as much as you could have, but at the same time, you won't lose as much as you could have, right? Or, you know, not really lose, but you know, you won't see that price go so far down from where you bought it from if you're buying like periodically. A big fan of DCAing into Bitcoin. Even if you have like what you're comfortable with, like, oh, I don't really need it anymore, it's still nice to keep DCA, you know?
Yeah, just a little bit. That cup of coffee every day is nice. And it's funny you say that, Omar. That's my recommendation for everyone starting in. Put a number, and that number is different for everybody. So I just use, you know, $1,000. Put half of it in right now, and the other $500, go ahead and DCA over the next 4 to 8 weeks. And then just continue that trend, and you'll go ahead and you'll average out. The price goes down, you know, you're going to average out. The price goes up, again, you'll average out. So just again, make sure that people understand. And a thing I think a lot of us miss is point them in the right direction. Don't allow them to go on Coinbase or other these shitcoin marketplaces. I always go to River, Strike, or Unchained. Out of those three, I really like Strike and I really like River, just for the ease. Unchained, they're a great company. I use them, but I think that the first two are the easiest. So make sure you always point them in the right direction.
Coleman, are you going to talk about the Coinbase stuff that came out, or did you talk about that at the beginning?
I've had it on my sheet, I think, since last Friday. And so every day there's a little bit more information that comes out on it. But yeah, Lisa, let's go ahead and hit on it. And so Coinbase, there's been a lot of controversy with Coinbase and BlackRock. And I believe we had Foss and Joe Calasari both kind of dispute those rumors, saying that they didn't believe anything nefarious was going on, and that it wouldn't make sense for Coinbase to be reckless with it and ruin their reputation with a large entity like BlackRock. But due to, I guess, the market questioning it, BlackRock went in and changed their custody agreement to require only a 12-hour window for withdrawals. And I believe before it was 24 hours. BlackRock has also come out and mentioned that they have their own node, and they do allow their high net worth individual investors to look at it to verify the Bitcoin they held is verifiable, but they don't allow the public to see it just for privacy concerns. Lisa, if I missed anything on that or anything else you want to mention, please go ahead and take over.
Well, the thing I saw today, or maybe it was yesterday, It's Coinbase amended some terms. It's section 9.3.4. And it basically says a holder of their Coinbase wrapped Bitcoin holds an ownership interest in the Bitcoin custodied by Coinbase. But if there's a shortfall, i.e. if they get hacked, if there is a shortfall in the amount of Bitcoin that has been wrapped as Coinbase wrapped Bitcoin, and it's held by Coinbase, then Coinbase's liability is limited to the holder's pro rata share of the remaining amount of Bitcoin, which means if they get hacked, you are fucked. Like, at this point, no one should have their Bitcoin on Coinbase. No one should own those ETFs. I mean, I think a vote in the ETF, I mean, I'm sorry, I'm going to say this, but I think a vote in the ETF is a vote that I think the government seizes Bitcoin through those ETFs. I think they become direct funnel to the government. So I don't own the ETF. I don't want to own the ETF. You cannot have your assets at Coinbase because there is a non-zero probability that they will get hacked. I mean, there is no reason for anybody in a Bitcoin veteran space to use an institution like BlackRock or Bitcoin to hold, to have exposure to Bitcoin. No reason. If you're in this space, you know, you have the cojones to navigate this space. I am like a middle-aged, you know, woman who mostly went to public schools. I can self-custody Bitcoin, distribute my keys across the world. You can figure out a solution if you're in the Bitcoin veteran space.
Absolutely. And we need to normalize that holding your keys is not difficult, because it is really not difficult. Do not listen to people that say it is. They don't know what they're talking about, or they have a too complicated system. It is very simple to purchase a cold card and memorize the 12 or 24 words. It is extremely simple. And BTC Sessions, Ben has dozens of videos that show you how to do this step by step. And so we need to make sure that people understand it is not complicated at all to do this.
No,
it's also Bitcoin veterans, we have chat groups set up to discuss this thing that is monitored by multiple admins to make sure there's nothing nefarious going on as people are teaching about self-custody. But if you have questions, please reach out, DM us. You see the handle at the top, Bitcoin Veterans, DM us, and we'll get you connected and get your answers, your questions answered.
Yeah, there's absolutely no reason to go out there and pay ridiculous fees to learn Bitcoin. And this is such an open and free market of people who are giving of themselves. If you've got questions, please don't make the mistake of going out there. Spend that money on Bitcoin. These guys are absolutely happy to help you. And a lot of it, it makes their day. It's the way they give back.
And I apologize. I didn't mean to push everybody to BTC Sessions. I do know we have those channels in the back. So everyone, go follow us.
Ben is great too. I highly recommend that. I just want to let people know about other alternatives that are a little more like you could get one-on-one, talk to a person.
Yeah, and I'm sorry I had to drop for a minute, but there's really no excuse, and there's really no reason, like Shane said, for you to have to go out and really even pay somebody to understand the basics of how to do this, take self-custody of your own coins. There's no substitute for it. Okay, going through any institution and trusting them, especially an institution that is so heavily ingrained and wrapped up in the tentacles of the government. Trust me, that they're not going to hold your Bitcoin for you, and they're not there for your benefit. There's no excuse to not being sovereign, at least to the point where you can maintain and store your own wealth in this day and age. And that's the best thing about Bitcoin, obviously, is there's never really been an opportunity to do it like this before. And so seize that opportunity, jump at it. This is a gift. This is a gift that no population, that no civilization has ever truly had in this way before. And who better to lead and to set the example for this level of self-sovereignty than a bunch of veterans, than a bunch of people who are highly effective at what they do. I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, to blow our own horn or anything, but we've got some badasses in this group. We have got some highly intelligent, highly skilled and proficient motherfuckers that know how to make things happen. And that is exactly what is taking place. Sorry for my language. I don't know if this is a family show or not, but it might have been. So,
Gabe, I blew that up earlier. You're good.
Love when we get Gabe to come out with motherfuckers. Like, that is, it is the icing on this show today. Absolutely golden.
I'm sorry, man. I'm not sorry, but I woke up and the first thing I saw was that son of a bitch signing a bomb. And I know that's kind of how we started out the conversation today, but that's the first thing I looked at. And it was like, you know what? This is the world that we're in right now. And this world that we're in demands a certain type of response. And sometimes you just got to do what you got to do. But the reality is, I'm going to echo what you guys have been saying. The resources are there. The people are there. We are here, and we want to share this knowledge with anybody who will come for it, with anybody who seeks it. We want to share it with you because we want to bring every person we encounter to another level of freedom. We want to bring ourselves and everybody that we touch and everybody that we impact and everyone that we influence to another level of freedom, because that is what's going to drive this civilization forward in the way that it needs to go. And anything else is going to result in less freedom. Okay, it's going to result in less individual sovereignty. It's going to result in less power, okay, that we need to hold, because the people that are holding the power, the people that have historically been holding the power, I think it's pretty clear. The pattern is there. The history shows us they are going to abuse it. It's not a mistake. It's not a misunderstanding. Okay, you're not paranoid and you're not a conspiracy theorist if you think that they're abusing power and manipulating us and doing the things that they are so obviously and clearly doing. But they are not going to release it unless we take it. Power is never given. It is always taken. That's all I got.
No, I love that game. Now that Gabe's got everyone's attention, I just want to give a quick thank you to our partners, Black Sheep Ammo, blacksheepammo.com, Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining. Have your own Bitcoin miner at your house. Solosatoshi.com. Punchplate. I didn't see it in the audience today, but check them out at punchplate.com. Put your seed phrase on a metal plate, not paper. Don't leave it under fridge like Terrence. And Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms and tactical training, paladintowertactics.com. Scott Willey is going to be coming down to the Bitcoin Veteran Podcast tonight at 7 o'clock Eastern time. So make sure you tune into that.
And I would go ahead. Hey, if you guys are out there and you love the show, go out there and smash all the buttons. Share it with a friend. This is one of the things I think we miss sometimes is we sit back and we're like, oh, you know, they'll come to us. No, go out there, take a little initiative. Share the show. It takes like 4 seconds, and that'll help all of this message spread and get people involved. Again, I can't stress it enough. Go share the show.
Yeah, it just takes a couple seconds, and it really helps us out. We really appreciate that. We give you all this great content every day, Monday through Friday, for free. That's the only payment we ask. Is just go ahead and retweet this, share this out, share it to your friends. Does anybody have any final comments or anything they'd like to mention or discuss we didn't speak about today? It's going to be really tough to beat Gabe's speech he just ended with, so choose your topic wisely. Okay, well then I'm going to go ahead and thank everybody who listened today, everyone who's in the audience, Hunter, Bitcoin Minutes. I really, really appreciate you guys joining us. Everyone who has on the background to tune out the voices in your head, and everybody who helped us with the panel. Eomar, thank you very much for coming up, and I hope you come back on. It was great to get your insights and get your view on things. Jordan, Gabe, Lisa, Shane, ACSI, you hop up there. Thank you guys all. And Jacob for doing everything in the background. Again, we're doing this tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock Central Time. And we're doing it every weekday, Monday through Friday. Tune into tonight, 7 o'clock, for the Bitcoin Veteran video podcast. Again, we have Paladin Tower Tactics. Scott Willey is going to be joining us. It'll be a great episode, so tune into that. Go out there, plant those seeds, till your soil, make sure it's ready for a great harvest, and go out there and crush it. Thank you, guys. Enjoy your day.